So we got the jobs report. It's weaker than expected. Some people are expecting weakness. And, you know, the markets aren't responding in any sort of panic. Maybe they want a rate cut and they're going to get a rate cut. We'll see. I tell you, if the GDP, you hope, I mean, if you think recession's on the table, it could have an impact on November, but it still seems like we're growing. So let's bring in, of course, our good buddy David Lightman from McClatchy, D.C. David, good morning. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm pretty well. I'm actually pretty psyched for the weekend. So this is my last 8 minutes of my week. So let's make it a good 8 minutes.
You must be rooting for the Orioles then, if you're looking forward to the weekend.
I know I'm not a Yankee fan. So
No.
But the Orioles are, I think they're running out of gas a little bit, but we'll see.
Got injury problems. Half that team is on the injured list.
Yeah,
it's a long season.
So, I mean, what are people rooting for? Are they? We're definitely getting a rate cut. The question is how much. A lot of economists are saying a half a point. I feel like that'd be a little panicky. But is a recession on the table in the buzz around D.C.?
No, there's concern, certainly, but, 142,000 jobs were created. It's not like there's a negative number here, which is actually more than July. And even half a point, which I suspect is going to be the case, to sort of goose the economy, people expect that, they expect to see it. No, I don't hear a lot of recession talk. I hear concern, and I hear impatience with the Fed, that they didn't act sooner, but no. The concern economically, by the way, is about the concerns of presidential election, because it seems like Harris and Trump are in this arms race to see who can spend the most money on tax breaks and other programs. Nobody seems to be talking about how they're going to really reduce the federal debt.
Well, if you listen to the show and some of the conversation, I'm a debt and deficit hawk, and it is the most important issue to me right now, because I remember 08 and I actually remember 07 when the stuff that happened in 08 and 09, no one ever thought was possible, right? So
right.
If
That's
you tell
right.
me that we can borrow in perpetuity, I can tell you that you can't guarantee me that. And so at some point, something's going to happen, and servicing the debt will cost us so much money, we won't be able to do anything else.
You know, I don't know what to think about this, because when I first came to Washington in the early 80s, the deficit had just gone over $100 million a year, okay? And that was seen as potential to blow up the economy. They tried tax cuts. Tax cuts just increased the deficit even more. And we and everybody else wrote, and economists said, this is a time bomb. The economy's going to just be ruined. Well, you know the rest. The 80s were a prosperous time. There was a mild recession in the early 90s. The 90s were a prosperous time. It did blow up, as you say, in 07, 08. But here we are, 15 years later, just piling on this debt, which is up to, what, $35 trillion now, I think? At some point, logic alone tells you this has got to explode, and it's scary. I'm with you. It scares the daylights out of me.
Well, and you also have the consumer. Like, basically what 08 did is that the government took on all the debt that people couldn't handle, and now you have a situation where the government's debt is bad, and consumer debt is all of a sudden ridiculously bad, and student debt is ridiculously bad. So there's nobody in America who's in the black.
No. And the fact that we're still growing almost defies economic logic. And I'm with you. I can see a year from now, particularly if they keep lowering rates, which is going to encourage people to bring on even more debt. I mean, this can't go on like this. But again, as much as we're trying to get people to talk about this, and we're only, 8 weeks from the election, all we keep hearing is more debt, more promises, less taxes.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. I want to get to the next question, but they're both sort of in a bit of, I mean, they're all like, oh yeah, Trump's like, well, I'm pro IVF now, and then Harris is like, yeah, let's do this for small bit. I mean, it is kind of silly. It really is silly season with this stuff. But next week, obviously, is a really massively important night on Tuesday night, and I can't tell who's got more to lose, and I don't know who's got the advantage. I mean, what are your thoughts on what we're going to see?
Okay, I've been talking to people all week about this, and I've covered debates since the beginning of time. There is a consensus here, and that is this is Harris's to lose. People know Trump. There's not going to be any surprise from Trump, either what he says, how he acts, how he looks.
Right.
He's well-known. People don't know Harris. They're still trying to define her. They're still trying to figure out if she, in fact, is the person they want. She has to do really two things. Number one is substantive. She has to talk not in generalities, which she has a tendency to do, but specifics. In other words, don't sit there and say, oh, I'm for the middle class. I care about the. Tell me, what are you going to do? And where? How are you going to pay for it? But the other thing is the intangible. And that's, this will be the lead, actually, story I'll write to preview the debate. And that is, what do people see in her? In other words, what do they feel about her? Does she look presidential? Does she seem to know what she's doing? Does she seem to have self-confidence? That's the key here.
Yeah.
If she looks like she's stumbling all over the place, she's got a problem. But if she looks presidential, then she's on to something. Then she's got some momentum. And how do you define that? Boy, that's a tough one. That's for the pollsters.
I'm really interested in how she treats him. Like, is she dismissive? Is she antagonistic? Does she shrink in the moment? Does she grow larger? Like, I mean, he will diminish and demean her. And the question is, how does she respond? And I think that will do a lot to define the whole race.
Yeah, the experts say she should pretty much ignore him.
Yeah.
In other words, don't let him set the agenda. Set your own agenda. Look at how she handled the question about his insult about her race when she talked to Donna Bash last week. You know, next question, move on. So they're saying just be statesmanlike. Be presidential. Don't get into a scrum with him because you're not going to win. This guy doesn't play by the rules. And it's going to be hard. And every now and then she's going to have to fight back, but she has to be careful. She has to look presidential.
We have a minute here. How, you know, obviously the Republicans and Trump are trying to pin every policy thing. And the border, you can definitely put on Harris to some degree because she was sort of named in charge of dealing with it. But they're trying to attach her to every single policy that of this administration. How much is a vice president involved in any policy making?
It depends. Put it this way. Their name is on the ledger, if you know what I mean. That's why there's only been one vice president who succeeded a previously elected president since 1836, and it's George Bush in 1988. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Al Gore had this problem. Yeah. I mean, Richard Nixon had this problem with Eisenhower. You know, you're part of the team, but you're not part of the team. And Harris, no, I don't think she had a huge role in shaping things, but she certainly went along. She certainly advised. She was in the room, so she owns it.
Yeah. It's going to be fun stuff. I can't wait to talk next week afterwards, too. Thanks.
Oh, it's going to be great.
All right, David, have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks.
All right, David Lightman.